Welcome to Chai with Sam Dosa. On my podcast, I invite guests from diverse backgrounds. My guest will be sharing their personal and business journey. So stay tuned in.
Hi, this is Sam Dosa with a podcast called Chai with Sam Dosa. Wherever you are in the world listening to this podcast, I'm directly from UK, and based in Birmingham, UK, which is a heart of England. Not everybody actually acknowledge that, but I'll tell you that it, what it is. So believe me that, because I'm telling you directly from my mouth. So welcome to Chai with Sam Dosa. Today I have an amazing guest all the way from United States, and she is Mary Elizabeth Malley. And what I can tell you about her is she's a very driven individual, and she got so many things to discuss today. And it's quite an amazing discussion I had with her before we scheduled this recording postcard, because my discussion is always about heart-centered conversation with my guests. So let me give you a small brief about Mary Elizabeth. Helps purpose-driven successful people in expanding joy and fulfillment beyond their work. As a relationship artist and coach, she helps people deepen love and connection in their relationship with themselves and others. Well, she has got a master's degree in traditional Chinese medicine. Her experience is being raised between three cultures. That's quite an interesting area, because she is Swedish. She is also speak Spanish, and so we will know where exactly which part of this country where she speaks Spanish very fluently. And then she's an American as well. So you can amazingly distinguish the three areas. And she's also a publisher, a poet. So amazingly beautiful bio. What I can say is she's been all around the world, and she's sharing some amazing wisdom with us. So welcome, Mary Elizabeth, to my podcast, Chai with Sam Dosa.
Thank you, Sam. I'm so happy to be here.
Amazingly beautiful. So let's begin with this question about what is your purpose in this transient world?
Well, really, if I were to boil it down to one word, it would be connection.
Amazing.
Because I spent my whole life as someone growing up between three cultures, raised in New York and going to Venezuela, where my father's side of the family was, or is still, some of them, the ones who haven't had to leave, and Sweden, where my mother's family is from. So growing up, going to these three places every year and speaking three languages, I really learned from a young age to translate and connect and try to understand, how does this culture do it? How does that culture do it? How do I, you know, fit in and understand these people and these people and these people? And so really my whole life has been a kind of journey like that. And so it's no accident that I got very interested in understanding relationships, understanding how we show up in relationships, and how do we expand both our understanding of what relationship is and what it has the potential to offer us, and also to understand how I relate to myself, how that informs how to relate to other people. So those have been very long-standing interests of mine. On top of many years of spiritual practice, I got interested in spirituality when I was quite young, as a teenager. I think also because I never felt a very fixed identity or home. And so based on that as well, which is spirituality is a very internal relationship. It's a mystic, for me, it's a very mystical internal relationship. And then how does that work in terms of how I relate to other people as well? So yeah, those are some initial thoughts on that question.
Wow, that's so beautiful. That's so beautiful, because I think it's cross-cultural things which you have mentioned, as well as about spirituality and this is how you present yourself. And there are a lot of kids growing up in the society who are completely taken back of identity. There is an identity crisis. It's who exactly I am. Am I American? Am I Pakistani or Indian or Spanish? Or am I Mexican? Or what is my origin? What is my origin? And that's very confusing, because most of the people, most of the children are going and now thinking of where I stand, how I can adjust myself in this society.
Exactly. I mean, you point to a really important distinction between nationality, you know, and ethnicity.
Yes.
So there's you can be American, but then what are you within American? Do you have a family culture that is still rooted in another country? Some of us do, some of us don't. And for you in the UK as well, right? How connected are you to your country of origin versus the nationality that you live in and that you maybe is your passport, right?
Yeah, because I was born in Pakistan, not in UK.
Exactly.
My kids are born in UK and they have this like, okay, we are British. My father is Pakistani. Their birth mother is British. Mm-hmm. Her family, her father was Pakistani. So she was born in Britain. So it's quite a distinguish between, okay, having a different language things as well going on. So she comes with me to Pakistan. She has to speak Urdu, even yes. though a lot of people want to speak English over there because they want their English to be better. And they want their Urdu to be better. So it's quite a tussle going on. And this is happening around the globe. And again, when you said about, you know, the culture, my generation, I was born in 69. So my generation is completely different from my father's generation, because they brought their culture with them to this country.
Yes.
This is, well, we are going to stick to what we have learned over there. We are not going to change anything. I want you to be staunch in your prayers, or I want you to be looking at these things and that thing and make sure that this is discipline and that discipline. And the girls are not supposed to go without telling their brothers or where their father or something like that. So there was so much strictness going on.
Yes.
But now in my generation, and I've given my children a sort of openness of flexibility and understanding that we have a trust factor between two of us. This is, you just have to tell me where exactly you are.
Yep.
And then you enjoy yourself, because I need to know where exactly you are. So in my picture, you just call me and I'm going to be there for you.
Yeah.
So that's a completely different, and a lot of people are still coming from different countries. They are not integrating in the society because they are bringing that culture with them. And they said, no, that's our culture. We're going to keep it up here. We don't want to change.
Right.
And this is a new country where they are settling in. If they're not adapted to change, they're finding it difficult to integrate integrate into the society. Correct?
That's correct. Yeah, it makes me think about, because what has happened a lot in the U.S., my family didn't do this. So I'm actually quite lucky in that I had connection to my Swedish roots. I had connection to my Venezuelan roots while growing up in the U.S. But what a lot of families do when they come is they say, okay, we're not going to even teach the language to our children so that they can assimilate more quickly. And then, and this has happened to, you know, lots of people I know. I happen to speak Spanish, but other people I know who come from a Latin background, maybe they don't. They might not, their parents, for their, in their desire for their child to have a better life, maybe didn't teach them the language so that their English would sound American, so they wouldn't have an accent, so they could fit in as much as possible. And then what often happens as they grow older, then there's this confusion about, wait, but I have this name, or I look like this, but I don't feel like I'm a part of that culture, but I don't feel like I'm a part of American culture either because I'm different. You know, it creates a lot of inner conflict. And then how do we relate to one another on top of this kind of internal conflict that we have? That takes a while to sort out.
It is. And there's another thing happens as a mother and father, we say, okay, our children are going to grow in this new society, new culture.
Yeah.
But then you say, oh, well, if I'm going to teach him my language, he is not, as you said, is not going to integrate into the society correctly. And that's the biggest mistake we do as a parent, because they are born in this country, they will learn English. They will go to school, they will learn English. They will pick up, because I remember, I've seen this boy, he was only 3 years old or 4 years old, one of our friend's son. And he used to speak English, Urdu, another dialect of Africa, African, Italian, Spanish. So he was speaking a couple of languages already in that young age, because parents were talking to him in that language. They were saying, okay, let's have a conversation. And as you know, that children by the age of 7, they are like a sponge, 5 years old to the 5, they are a sponge. They sponge, they just absorb everything. And you can use any language, they know the answer.
Yeah.
We do not have
that happened. That happened with me too. And I really didn't learn English until I went to school when I was 3. Because at home we spoke mostly Spanish and Swedish. And the amount of English that was spoken was the least, you know? And yes, it was hard when I was 3 years old trying to sort out all these different languages. It you know, they all jumbled together for a while, but this is how the brain works. It kind of makes it all one language until you get old enough to realize, oh, this person speaks this one, that one speaks that one, that one speaks that, and you learn to differentiate. And sure, that was hard when I was 3 years old to be sent home from school because they couldn't understand what I was saying. But, you know, now I'm fine. And I'm glad that I had that experience because it's made me a more flexible person.
Yeah, and because now you have this training from the young age, you speak 3 different languages. For you to settle into Sweden is when you say, okay, I can settle in Sweden, no problem. Anybody speak Sweden or the same sort of a dialect, I can easily go into adjust in that sort of society or in the culture easily. If you go to Venezuela or any Spanish country where they speak Spanish, you can come to Spain and you says, you know, you are going to blend in. They will look at you and says, you are Spanish. You have a completely different dialect, but you speak Spanish, correct?
Right. Right. There's still a relationship.
Yes, correct. So same with in Arab states. So everybody speak Arabic. So if you go into Syria, they have a completely different dialect of Arabic. If you go into Egypt, they have a completely different dialect of Arabic, but there is one sound. They all come together as that's all Arabs. They speak Arabic, but as well, because we all speak different language with different dialects, we use what I call it slang Arabic or slang English or slang Spanish. So we use here in UK, if you go to South London, you are speaking in a South London accent, which is called Cockney, and you go into West London, you're completely West London, or you come into Birmingham, they will look at you and say, oh, you are a Brummy, because your accent is completely different, completely twist and everything. And within Birmingham, if you go into black country, you will not understand exactly what they are saying. It's so hard to understand. But again, as you said, you know, everybody has this, everybody has that capacity to mold themselves, to adjust themselves, to be part of that society. If they want to get integrated, not leaving anything, just integrating into this society instead of saying that, no, I can't integrate in that. And there are a lot of culture does that. And And that's where the impact happens on the children. That's where our family are not integrating in the school, for example. School have assemblies and they will say to them, no, you can't go to assembly. Sorry, there are a lot of people are going to be there. You can go to the class, but don't go to the assembly. You can't go on to the school trips or something like that.
Right.
So that sort of things happens within the society, within the culture.
That's true. It really does. And then the kids get kind of torn between, you know, because I can understand the desire to keep the culture very alive, like my family did. I feel very lucky to have had that. And, you know, it can be hard on the child who's trying to fit in and who's trying to be quote unquote normal according to the society that they now live in, right? They don't want to stand out as being different. You know, and so it can be quite a tug of war, I think. Indeed. My parents told me a story once that I used to, when we had our spring vacation, mm-hmm. which is when we always went to Venezuela. I don't remember what age I was, but at some point, I used to lie and not say that we were leaving the country. I would say, oh, call me. You know, this is back when we had telephones and there were no answering machines back then in the 60s. You know, so early 70s, there were no answering machines. So I would say, oh, call me during the break. Let's get together on spring break, because I didn't want to let people know that I was leaving the country, you know, that I wasn't like them. I wasn't going to be in New York like they were. And so I really, when my parents told me I used to do that, it made a lot of sense about, you know, how much as a child I wanted to fit in. I didn't want to be different. And then now as an adult, I value those experiences. But at the time, it was hard.
It is, because, you know, what is culturally what we see, we want exactly the same thing. We want to see that, okay, we have a completely different culture within our house. And then you go on to somebody else's house, a sleepover, and you see something completely different. And you say, why I don't have that in my house?
Right.
Then you start having questions about it, and this is, why don't we have the bigger car, or why don't we have the right sort of a food or clothes or something like that? Why we have those sort of things? So we have, your mind started to question a lot of things, and you started to ask those questions to your parents, and your parents don't have an answer. I used to remember my daughter used to come home and says, oh, my friend got a very nice phone. Her dad has bought her an iPhone. I says, well, I can't afford it, mate. I used to say, I don't afford it. Is her father can buy it? That's perfectly fine, but I can't afford it. Sorry. This is the phone we're going to have. Otherwise, give me the phone back. And I said, no, I want to keep the phone. It's okay. All right. So we can't justify everything, but right. We can direct them. This is what it is right now. So in terms of your professional journey, how are you getting this all working out for your customers?
Thank you. A great question. So because I've really worked so hard to cultivate a kind of inner belonging, because I haven't always experienced belonging out in the world, it's a similar transition when you're in relationship with another person to really cultivate a sense of belonging to yourself and an alignment with yourself, and from there entering the relationship, from there communicating with the other person. Because if you are comfortable in your own skin and you know who you are, you have a lot more room to be curious, to come to a conversation with curiosity, with spaciousness, with room for you to be you and them to be them. And what I find is so many of us, because we haven't really developed that inner sense of belonging or that inner comfort with who we actually are, we come to our relationships with other people looking for validation, looking for to be right. And, you know, my way has to be right. And that means you're wrong. And we come with all these fixed ideas that when we are more comfortable with ourselves, those fixed ideas can be softened a bit. And we can learn more about one another. This is something I think that's really important in our current global moment, is how do we cultivate spaciousness for differing points of view and understanding. Really, I love how you talk about these conversations as a heart-centered conversation, because I think that's what we need more of. And in order to access that, we first have to know our own heart.
Indeed, indeed. I think if you don't know yourself, knowing somebody else is going to be harder for you, because you don't know your own, as you said, if you understand you're under your own skin. You know, sometimes you treat people very badly, but if you are being treated that way, you says, how can you treat me like that? Yeah. Not realizing that we are treating people like that.
Right.
And today somebody put the post on saying that, you know, blaming others or doing those sort of things to others is becoming a norm for people. And I put a note and says, you know, when you point a finger to somebody like that, yeah, two fingers are going towards that person, but three fingers are coming back to you. Look at yourself.
Yeah.
Look at yourself. You can't just say, oh yeah, I'm all good. You know, you are all the culprits. And then you will use that sort of, spirituality is one of those things, you know, as you said, you have gone through with your own journey and you can understand that the inner happiness, the inner deepened happiness comes when you are self-aware about yourself. You feel so congruent with your feelings. You feel so complete inside, and you look at outside and people are running around like headless chicken, and you look at your, so you pose yourself and you says, well, I'm posing myself and I'm seeing everything is so slow for me, but for other people it's so fast for them because they are running around like headless chicken. I remember my time, I used to run like headless chicken.
Yeah.
Now I'm congruent with myself, I congruent my feelings and I congruent with my heart, inner happiness is there. I'm touch wood, doing my mindfulness and sitting my gratitude and all those sort of things. And I know that whatever thing comes, I acknowledge it as some of whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. I say, thank you. Is a good thing, thank you. Is bad thing, still thank you. That I was being chosen to receive those things and I acknowledge them. And that's where, you know, we say to a lot of people, you know, sitting in mindfulness for 10 minutes won't harm you, but it will increase your self-awareness. But we do, in 24 hours, 834,000 seconds, we do not have 10 minutes.
Right. And I love how you put that, because it's also, I want to say yes, and I'm going to add another piece, because it is the practice of training yourself to be mindful, to feel your responses to things, that begins to build a gap between your initial reaction. So someone says something that you like or you don't like. I love how you said that. Whether I like it or not, I say thank you. You know, something happens, whether you like it or not, you have an automatic reaction. Our nervous system is wired the way it is, and it just has a reaction. But we don't have to always put that reaction out, especially if it's an inconvenient one that we'd rather not share. So you can have the reaction, but by building more mindfulness into your system, you begin to build a gap so that you can have the reaction, it is what it is, and then you choose a different response. You have the mindfulness to be able to say, oh, I have a flooding of emotion right now. I feel afraid, or I feel angry, or I feel hurt, and I have this wave of emotion happening in here. Let me pause, like you said, you mentioned the pause. Let me pause for a moment and choose what I want to say, instead of just saying the first thing that wants to fly out of your mouth. And in this way, you know, you acknowledge what's here. You don't deny or suppress what you're feeling, but you also begin to have the ability to create a gap and respond with more skill. And I think that is something that our current world is lacking a bit, because everybody is very reactive, and we haven't yet built, many of us haven't yet built this ability to be true to what we're feeling, but respond with a little more deliberateness than perhaps is usual.
I think you are quite spot on for those sort of areas. And again, when you say, you know, we have urge to say something, you know, there's another thing I want to add over here is when something comes out from our mouth, you can't put it back.
Right.
That's gone. Correct. You can type in an email to your boss, you are swearing in your emails, and you say, you know what, I'm not going to send it, I'm going to delete everything. I just wanted to went out and just type it everything down, and I'm just going to, you delete it. But because if somebody slap you, for example, it will hurt you, correct?
Yes.
For 2 minutes, 3 minutes. But if somebody slap you with emotion slap, that remains to your heart or your consciousness for the rest of your life. So that's why I said to my daughters as well, I said, watch your mouth. When it comes something out, when it goes out, you will not get it back into your mouth, because when it's gone, it's gone. It's going to pierce somebody's heart like a knife, sharp knife. And you will not heal that until that person will say to you, I forgive you. I forgive you for that, what you have done to me. And that's why we have to be very mindful. Let's take example, we do self-talk to ourselves. So what sort of talk we are doing to ourselves? If it is going to be negative, you would have a negative impact on your body or in your senses and your conscious and everything. If you started talking positive about everything, that you love yourself, not as a narcissist.
Welcome to Chai with Sam Dossa. On my podcast, I invite guests from diverse backgrounds. My guest will be sharing their personal and business journey. So stay tuned in.
As a person that you have been given, as you are humble to be given this shell, which is so beautiful, which is so rejuvenating, because you are putting a lot of good things in your body, so your mind can actually enhances in a completely different way. When you see somebody, you appreciate the beauty of somebody instead of you says, you know, you look okay. So it all cultivates in that sort of a dimensions at how you look at yourself first.
Absolutely. And I love that you brought up this piece around self-talk, because this is a lot of the work that I do with my clients, because we're so mean to ourselves, most of us. And I like to look at the voices, at, you know, the various thoughts that tend to recur, like the critic or our judge or our fear, any of the voices that go through our heads a lot. I look at them as members of an orchestra, which means they all have the right to play their instrument. They all have the right to speak, but they don't have the right to take center stage and stay there. And I talk about really installing your maestro or your conductor of the orchestra, which is what I call your awareness, your witness, your clarity, your adult ego, your, you know, really your aware adult. And so while all of us have all sorts of thoughts that happen in our heads, they don't get to own the stage. So it's not about suppressing or silencing anything, but it is about being choosy about which part of your awareness do you allow to be in front. And so I teach people to really bring themselves back over and over again to their clarity, their adult aware ego, that part of their ego that is awareness, versus allowing the chaos to really be the only thing speaking. And in that way, they develop a lot more self-acceptance, because, you know, that critical thought or that judging thought can come up and it can be witnessed. Oh, look at that, there's judgment. Oh, look at that, there's critic. But it's not the only thing. It's being witnessed as one of many things. And you can choose in that moment, oh, I don't have to listen to you. Like, oh, hi, critic, I hear you. I hear you have something to say about what I'm doing. Thank you. And I'm good. Like, you can sit down. You can stop playing your instruments. Sit down. I'm going to keep going. And in this way, you begin to change your relationship with your self-talk so that you have more power to go for what you want. You have more discernment in your speech, in the way that you're talking about. You have more deliberateness and discernment because you're coming from your clarity. You're not only operating from the wounding, if that makes sense.
Yes, yes. I think that's quite an area where it requires a lot of people, especially our youth, to learn those areas, because you go to that adulthood or that teenage years when you started looking at yourself and comparing yourself with a lot of people outside your remit, and then you feel that you are the culprit, or you are the one who is not good looking, or nobody wants to talk to you. And because you create that sort of false statement to yourself, because there might something has happened in our childhood. There are a lot of episodes happen when the teacher says to you, you don't know how to do that, or you never complete your homework, or your mother says something to you, you always leave all those sort of things, or your father says something to you. And there are a lot of things that are going to be hanging on those sort of areas where you keep it into yourself, and you're moving with those things in your future life, not realizing those are the shackles you are tying to yourself. and they are affecting you until you find somebody who will say, you know what, I can help you to unshackle yourself if you are ready. And because we are so comfortable on those shackles, and say, no, I'm fine. Until you reach to that age where you say, yeah, it's very painful. I can't move on right now. I can't move on. Because universe showing so many signs to you.
Yeah.
Universe saying to you, you can be an amazing author, you can be an amazing an engineer or a doctor or an amazing individual. But because we got so many shackles on our foot, we can't untie them and can't started to walk or started to become a butterfly, to started to fly away. And that's where a lot of things comes in. When people says to you a lot of things and you are hanging those grudges in your heart and you are not moving on. And that's where everything started to cultivate and you says, you know, I'm always finding it difficult to move forward because I don't know what is happening.
Yeah, that's so beautifully said. I really agree. And this happens in relationship quite a bit too, where, you know, all of a sudden, like, I don't know why I'm shouting. Why am I so angry in this moment? And if you haven't done the work to understand, you know, how your family spoke to one another, or, you know, how your educational system taught you to believe what is important. Maybe you are stuck in comparison. I like to say compare and despair, you know, because really, if you're trying to compare yourself to anybody else, that you're going to go off course. You're going to try to live somebody else's life that's really not your life, you know? So, and then that also is a shackle, right? If you were taught, oh, I have to be a doctor to be acceptable, but you have the soul of an artist, you might be a very successful doctor, but you're not going to be happy. And so, you know, it's important to really do the work to understand, what have I learned? What have I internalized from culture, family, educational system, and religion? What of that feels like mine is actually true for me? And what of it feels like a tight cloak that's not really mine, but it's something I internalized? And then you begin to do the work to take off that cloak or the shackles and live more in truth with what's yours, you know, what is actually your own soul and heart desire, then that's when life really gets interesting, you know, because then you can really become the thing that you are meant to be, or you can show up in relationship with the kind of authenticity and self-expression and genuine curiosity, because you're in touch with yourself. We're back to that. You're in touch with your true self again.
Yeah, true self, that true self again. When people say, when you say to somebody, you start loving yourself, and they look at you and says, so what do you mean by that, loving yourself?
Right. It's a foreign concept, right?
Really correct. Yeah, it is. And when you say somebody to love yourself and say, no, I rather love other. I don't want to love myself. I rather solve somebody else's problem instead of solving my own problem. Somebody is going to die. I'm going to help him, support him. But internally, I'm dying myself. I don't need any help.
Right. I think that's the way that we cut off. We just cut ourselves off from receptivity in that way, you know. I see this a lot in my clients. There's such an emphasis on doing and caring and, you know, putting others first. But, and that's fine if you're a genuine saint and have no needs. But most of us are not. We're human beings. And so a lot of what I teach is really to allow your own needs to be on the same playing field. I'm not even saying make yourself more important. I'm saying make yourself as important as the people you love, because they also want to give to you. And if you cut off that giving because you're so uncomfortable with receiving, you're actually denying the people who love you an important gift, which is the gift of giving to you, which is the gift of giving you joy and pleasure. And if you're so busy trying to be the giver only, it cuts off the cycle of life that could be really beautiful if giving and receiving were both working smoothly.
So So again, there is always when you are in the plane, when there is an oxygen mask comes down, and this is put your oxygen mask first before you put it onto your children. Yeah,
exactly.
So if you are going to cut off your own oxygen, how are you going to supply the oxygen to others? So in my first marriage, I used to tell because I used to have an argument with my ex, and she used to say, my daughters are ill and I'm feeding myself. I'm trying to have my dinner and everything. And she used to shout at me and says, how can you eat when your children are sick? And I used to say, if I'm not going to eat, I'm not going to nourish my body, how I'm going to support my children. So if you
That's
want
exactly
me to,
right.
So if you want me to starve, then I'm going to be on the bed. Then how are you going to handle? Because you can't handle anybody right now. I'm trying to nourish myself so I can support the children. So that concept stuck in my mind. And I say, you know, you are number one, Sam.
Yeah.
If you don't look after yourself, nobody's going to look after you. And that's what I said to my clients as well. You are number one. If you look after yourself, then you will be able to look after everybody. If you don't look after yourself, how are you going to look after others? You will be the one first drop dead.
That's right.
Nobody's going to pick you up and survive.
And you'll be full of resentment.
Absolutely.
And you'll be angry and you know, that affects the connection as well. You know,
absolutely.
If you're giving, but you're not filling your own cup, you're not putting your own oxygen mask on, that just breeds resentment.
Absolutely.
And then relationships just become these resentments, you know, thrown back and forth at each other, and you've lost the real connection. Whereas when you are filling yourself up, as well as, you know, I think this is the thing people forget, which I love how you put that, like, you know, you're number one. Because if your own cup is filled, you can be so much more generous to other people. So when people get hung up on like, oh, I don't want to get narcissistic, you know, I don't want to prioritize myself. And so I try to kind of sneak them into this understanding by saying, you know, if you're overflowing, if you fill yourself up, then you can give from the overflow. It's actually better for the people around you than if you're trying to give from empty. Because when you give from empty, they can feel that. It doesn't feel good. They get worried about you because you're empty. Whereas when you're giving from the overflow, that just feels delicious to everybody. And so in this way, that's why it matters to feed yourself, to put your own mask on first, all of those things.
Absolutely.
Because it actually makes you able to give more.
Yeah, very true. Very true. So, you know, we were talking about this vibration when people come into a relationship and they are not on the same vibration, how that vibration creates so many repulsion. Because you said gone through with your own journey with your partner and your husband and everything, and how that was not marrying and together in one place, and it affecting your communication. It happens to me as well in my first marriage as well. It affected so badly that there was a very big gap between me and my ex-wife. It still is, not leaving me alone, but that's another story. But this is quite a fundamental in a relationship. Then when people say, oh, I love you dearly, I do this, I do that, and then, you know, suddenly they are in a completely different mindset, and they are like opposite to each other, and you says, oh, well, I'm here and you are here, I can't communicate, or you are here, I can't communicate, and I can't look up to you. And what is your thought in that?
Well, I come from the perspective of looking at what's happening in the communication as something I need to see in myself. Mm-hmm. And so I did have that experience with my ex-husband, where what the most important thing to me in relationship is connection and growth.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be in relationship so that I can grow as a person, so that I can get free, so that I can be self-expressed, so that I can take off more conditioning, show up more as love, because I believe that that's who we are at our core, is we are love, and we have a bunch of stuff on top of it that makes us think we're many other things. But when you strip all that away, we're love. So I'm in a relationship to help reveal love. Whereas my ex-husband is a beautifully loving, amazing man. He loves being married, but his orientation is not so much toward growth as mine is. He has more of an orientation that I would label for comfort, which is fine. I mean, the most freeing thing I realized after we separated and he was dating someone new who we married, and they now have two children and they have a beautiful relationship. And what I said something about some growth, some spiritual growth thing. And he said, yeah, that's just not very important to us. And I had this epiphany of, oh, it's not that one of us is right and the other one is wrong. It's that I want this thing. I want relationship as growth. I want relationship as self-knowledge, as revealing more love. And he wants relationship as companionship or whatever. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but this is my understanding of what he expressed, was that he wants relationship for companionship, to be a father, to be a husband, which is beautiful and noble in its own right. And it's different than what I want. So in that moment, I realized, oh, we both are right in that sense of we each want the thing we want, which is right for us. We just want different things. And so in that way, I kind of get out of the, this high vibration, low vibration. Mm-hmm. I try not to speak too much of it that way, because that can get hierarchical very quickly and people can think like, oh, I have to be this holy person and that's good. And, it just can create more conditioning in my experience. So I prefer to look at it more as a mirror. Like, what am I being shown by this relationship about how I show up, about how I communicate, about how I handle it when I'm angry, about how I handle it when I'm hurt? And how do I expand my capacity to respond in those moments that are uncomfortable with grace and with skill and with heart, so that my heart is coming into my communication even when I'm angry, but that I can reveal more love with everything I do. And to me, how that happens is not always a comfortable process. Like, to really have the kind of loving and deep connected relationship, if that is your desire, you have to get comfortable sitting with discomfort. Absolutely. And that's where mindfulness is key, to be able to have discomfort arise and not immediately have to lash out with it, but just go, wow, I'm uncomfortable. What's happening? What am I thinking or believing? What's being stirred here? Oh, I'm remembering when my father talked to my mother like that and I didn't like it. And that's happening now. Wow, how could I respond differently, right? And so you begin to create the capacity to respond in a new way because you're willing to be with discomfort, really.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You nailed it. There are things... Which feel uncomfortable to us during any relationship, whether it's your relationship with yourself, whether your partner, your mother, your father, your siblings and your children. And this is all part of a journey. But then again, we need to be acknowledging those things. Sometimes we do not acknowledge them then, because we are coming from a completely different generation, or the process that, oh, my father dealt with this way, I'm going to deal with the same way, and this is going to work. But it does not work that way, because you are living in a completely different era than
right
your father was. Because I remember when I was young, my father had a big cane in his hand. If you're not going to behave, this is the cane you're going to get. It I can't do the same thing to my children. I says, oh, do you want me to give you a cane? And he says, I don't know the child helpline number. I'm going to call them. They will come and collect you from here.
That's right.
So it's completely, then it's again, how you show up or how you say those things to your dialogue with your children is completely different. You need to understand nowadays that youth is becoming more critical thinkers.
Yes.
Who has been given this opportunity to be critical thinkers. I wasn't a critical thinker in my youth at that time, but now as I grew up.
No, we were taught to behave, right? We're about the same age. We were taught to behave.
Yeah. We were being told, sit, you sit. It says, go there, you go there. And now I said to my daughters, you need to not going out. And says, why not? Give us the reason. My friends are out already. I have to go now. And they argue until you just say, okay, yes, go now. Because, but we have, as the coaches, we have learned one thing, that you need to have this technique, which is called broken record technique. You just, if your daughter says something, it says no. It says no. It says no. So then it says, whatever I'm going to say to my dad is going to say no. So they understood that there is a broken technique. So they're going to argue with it. So these are the things happening right now. And I understand with your profession, you encounter so many people. There might be couples, there might be singles. They might be coming in from a corporate as well, where they're bringing so many other things as well. It's the dynamic. A lot of dynamic is changing. Is that right? Correct?
I think it is. I really think the dynamics of relationships are changing today, both because what you say, also the generation after us, I think somehow are already being raised with a lot more consciousness than we had. We were taught to behave. We were taught to, you know, children at least, you know, are to be seen, not heard, to be, you know, dress well and sit in the corner and not make a mess, you know? And I think, a lot of that got changed with the next generation. Children were raised with a lot more affirmation. They were raised with a lot more praise than I got. And that's created a very different animal now as adults, you know? So they kind of, the next generation sort of feels they deserve certain things that I certainly never grew up with feeling I deserve certain things. I had to learn that. So I think the next generation is lucky in some ways because they've been raised with maybe more emphasis on self-esteem than my generation had, our generation had. However, the flip side, the danger of that is that they then don't understand that things take work. They think everything should come, you know, kind of easy. And so it's very interesting to think generationally. And then now that we have social media, so we're connected to one another in ways that we never were before. So the possibility for distraction is endless in a way that we never had before. And the possibility to know what's happening in every corner of the world at any moment is so huge that creates a lot. I don't think our nervous systems have yet expanded to be able to filter everything that comes toward us well. So many of my clients, certainly, but I see all around me many, many people struggling with overwhelm, struggling with feeling paralyzed, not knowing what to do next, not knowing what to say, who they are. And part of that is just that there's too much input flooding. It's like an electrical, you know, cord in your house. It's the wires in the wall weren't designed to handle this much electricity, and then it trips the wire and you have to go turn on the circuit breaker. I think our circuit breakers are blown much of the time now. And because of that, it also makes it harder to respond skillfully in the moment when things happen, because our circuits are already blown. We don't have bandwidth.
Yeah.
That's just something I'm seeing a lot, is just this huge amount of overwhelm. And it's because too much is coming at us that we can't filter.
Yeah, because then this COVID-19 has given us a lot of food for thought, as well as it's given us time to think outside the box, because we were being put into a box where we used to go to work and commuting to work and coming back home. And then it's all the same routine going on. And suddenly you are now with your partner, with your family and everybody. And now you are thinking, oh my God, this is a completely different beast at the moment, because you never used to have those sort of things. Now you're spending time with your children, or you're spending time with your partner, and your partner is saying so many things, and then says, when did that come from?
I didn't see this person.
Yeah, who is this person? And then you wake up and you see things in the house, and it says, when did we bought that? I says, you gave me your credit card and I bought that. And I say, oh, I don't remember that. So you can remember there are a lot of things happening. And this is also one of those things where a lot of people are learning to live together as a couple. And some people are not ready to live as a couple as well, because they were never present in that time
And they always had space, yeah, you know, yeah, they got to yeah, be apart eight yeah, or 10 hours yeah, a day.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden you're in the house 24/7. And yeah, it's changed. It's really, especially this sheltering at home time, it can either be a train wreck or it can be the best thing that's ever happened in your life. It's up to you.
True. Very true. So Mary Elizabeth, it was an amazing conversation with you. It was quite an interesting discussion we had. Where we started and where we have come through is like, when I had an introduction with you, we have gone through with this deeper understanding of each other and the flow. And it did not know that we know about each other now more. And the way we talk about things, it looked like that I known you for a long time, because it looked like we had a very good connections from the back end. It did not seem like that I just had a conversation, 15 minutes conversation with you before I started on my podcast. So thank you very much for your time today. And guys, if you need to connect with Mary Elizabeth, I will put all her links. She has a gift for you, so do take a look at that gift as well. And amazing. I will highly recommend connect with her. But before we go, I have a couple of more questions to ask her so you can connect her instantly. So let's ask her, what's your favorite food?
Oh boy, my favorite food. Well, chocolate. but food, I do love chocolate, dark chocolate, at least 70% cacao, 70 to kind of 90 range mm-hmm. is my favorite. There's really wonderful cacao that comes from Venezuela. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if part of it is just DNA. Historically never grew, they grew coffee historically, but they never grew chocolate. But not that I know of anyway. But in terms of food that I eat, on a daily basis, I love a very simple meal of some kind of protein, whether it's fish, chicken, or red meat. Mm-hmm. I don't so much eat pork, and some kind of greens. Like I really love Brussels sprouts and kale and zucchini and chard and all of those kind of green things with a little bit of meat. And then sometimes I'll have some rice, like coconut rice or rice, white rice. But very often it's just kind of like a protein and a green is what I love.
Amazing, amazing, healthy eating. Yes, I love it. Yeah. I love my salad, and my wife has started saying that you need to eat some salad now. You don't just to go for eating the normal Indian food all the time. I said, no, I love eating everything. Don't worry about it. Your hobbies?
Well, I love writing poems and also prose, but really my training is more in poems. So when I get a chance, I'll write. I love to read. I was raised as an only child, and a lot of how I spent my time was reading. Mm-hmm. So I find reading very soothing. It's one of the ways that I self-soothe. And one of my favorite hobbies is underwater photography. So I'm a very avid scuba diver. Obviously, I haven't been able to go diving in quite some time, but I do take a lot of underwater photographs, and I have a photo site online with my photographs that are for sale. But it really is more of a hobby. Like the beauty under the water, to be immersed. Again, this is kind of like the theme where I'm going to go back to where we began.
Meditation.
To be under the water and immerse myself in a world that is not mine, where I can't even breathe without assistance, without a tank. And to get to witness their world and see the personalities of the fish and the sharks and everything down there and how they interact with one another and their little codes of hierarchy and relationship and the way everything interacts in this completely different world is fascinating to me. And it is really like a meditation. And it is one of the places where I experience the divine. So that's one of my favorite things.
Wow, that's beautiful. I think I wanted to learn scuba diving, and I spoke to a couple of people, and it's always there is a universe is saying that there will be a time when you go and do that. So I think I'm just in that sort of a phase where the universe says now is the time, go learn scuba diving.
Because oh, good.
I want to go and sit in the, you know, when I'm in the swimming pool, I go and sit in the bottom part of the swimming pool. And then I just sit there and I just meditate. And I said, I love it. I just, because it's so calming, it's so soothing.
It's so calming, right? Yeah. Yeah.
You are
there's
in
something.
With, yeah.
Well, there's something about, for me, so in scuba diving, you want to have what's called neutral buoyancy. Okay. And what it means to have neutral buoyancy is that you're neither floating or sinking, but you are perfectly held by the water. But in order to be held by the water, you have to do your part. And so for me, that's always been a metaphor for how we relate with God, you know? It's like you're held by this something that's larger than us, consciousness, yes. Whatever word you like for yes. the thing yes. that's larger. Mm-hmm. But it's not a passive abdication of responsibility. Like you show up to it and it shows up to you. Yep. And it's this beautiful buoyancy, then you get to have the experience of ease, of moving through life feeling supported, where your efforts are bearing fruit and you're not overworking, but you're not underworking and you feel held. So I get to have that direct visceral experience in my body when I'm underwater, and that also helps me live it in my life.
Amazing, amazing. Thank you very much for that amazing experience you shared with us. And I would say it has been an amazing talk with you today, and I wish you all the best for your future endeavors, and we will get in touch again to do another episode on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been so great to talk with you. Thank you.